So Ina, thank you so much for joining us. First of all, could you briefly introduce yourself and the position you have at PAX to our listeners?
I am an expert on environmental safety. I joined PAX in July this year. This main task to analyze the environmental aspects of the Russian-Ukrainian war. Based on the monitoring data from incidents, data happening from the military actions in Ukraine.
All right, so Russia invaded Ukraine in February of this year. So there's been approximately 8 to 9 months of fighting already. What could you already say on the work that you've done for PAX about the impact this has had on the environment?
The impact on the environment, let's say the environmental damage from military action is huge across the whole country. According to the Ministry of Environment, I would like to give you some numbers. Almost the third of Ukrainian land is mined, this territory of about 200,000 square kilometers needs demining. Today, Ukraine is one of the most mined countries in the world. 20% of nature conservation areas of Ukraine were affected by the war. About forest damage. Ukrainian forests are burned and dug trenches. It will take tens of years to restore forest resources. As a result of Russian full-scale invasion in the period from February to early April, forest fire have spread over the area of 40,000 hectares. And if we are talking in total across country, it's about 600,000 hectares of forest are comprised by military operations. The conflict-related debris are a significant burden on the environment. Thousands of destroyed buildings, cars, public transport, remains of military equipment and shells occupying a huge area of our lands. All these need proper storage with future disposal, safe disposal, because these debris contain substances toxic to the environment and human lives, such as asbestos and heavy metals, which during the storage on the sky seep through the soil cover into the groundwater. Different attacks on oil depots, warehouses of chemicals and ammunition and other industrial hazardous facilities storing toxic substances affect almost all components of the environment, air, surface and groundwater and land resources. Also, there are a lot of air pollution, like emissions of military equipment and from explosive weapons, as well fires of forests, oil depots, gas pipelines after missile strikes, and these emissions also include greenhouse gases contributing to climate change. And also, I would like to say about water quality and the problem of the quality of water bodies has become urgent because there are attacks on the infrastructure of intake, purification and supply of water, as well as sewage treatment facilities. Water supply and drainage facilities in cities have been damaged. There is a problem of clogging with remnants of military equipment, pollution from fuel, explosives, and so on. Therefore, ecosystem services of water, forest, land resources are being lost due to mined territories or areas contaminated with explosive remnants of war. All this leads to the losses of biodiversity and ecosystems of Ukraine.
All right, thank you, Irina. So basically, the damage to the environment is huge. you mentioned biodiversity losses. You also mentioned the release of toxic gases, of asbestos, polluted water. What concretely does that mean for the civilians in Ukraine itself? Like, how will this affect them now, but also in the years to come?
I would like to give one clear example about mined lands. Mined lands is a long-term influence on ordinary people's life. For example, my friends from Kyiv Oblast cannot go in deep green areas where they used to pick mushrooms or berries, and it was a daily way of life. Families who are engaged in agricultural businesses are also at risk when cultivating land in the areas where the fighting took place. Let's say only in October there are reports of this from detonation of mines. Farmers, road workers, emergency medical personnel, and repairmen of communication system, energy objects in different parts of the country. So I would say that mines like an invisible enemy of Ukrainians now and prevents us to use our land.
You've been doing the monitoring work before PAX, but also for PAX for several months now already. Has there been something that you encountered that maybe in terms of environmental damage or harm to civilians that you hadn't expected, that was surprising even to you, or maybe particularly concerning to you?
Yes, it's about massive attacks on energy infrastructure. First of all, and it's a first precedent in the world where some countries suffering from this amount of military attacks on the energy infrastructure that is really a civilian one. And to answer this question, I would share with you a clear example of how these attacks affect the environment and the health and well-being of people. Disruption of power generation plant and power transmission lines lead to deindustrialization of both populated areas and the industrial sector. The cut of power supply in populated areas creates a humanitarian crisis when people don't have access to basic life-supporting services like clean drinking water, use of sewage service, heating system, and storage of food in the refrigeration unit, as well as there is no access to information and to service of public electric transport. One example is about water quality. And the main facility of the water treatment complex is a so-called air tank, intended for artificial biological treatment of wastewater using activated sludge and aeration. If the power supply is turned off, the air supply is stopped, leading to the death of these microorganisms, and the sewage treatment process just does not take place. Non-operating treatment facility brings to the situation when the polluted influence enters the river directly, increasing public health risk related to unsafe water. And here we are talking about waterborne diseases and even about epidemic situation.
Are we already seeing the outbreak of diseases, or is that a worry for like something that will happen in maybe the weeks or months to come?
We see epidemic situation in the Mariupol city. It mostly related to the occupied territory where they don't have access to the clean water and even no water at all. And the most vulnerable group of people is children under 15
So you already talked about the targeting of energy infrastructure. Earlier you said something about mines. Are there other parts of the Russian military strategy or the way the conflict is being fought that are excessively harmful to the environment?
The most destructive incidents damaging the environment are happening due to the use of explosive weapons. These weapons cause fires, destroy forests, contaminate fertile soil, pollute water bodies, and damage civilian infrastructure. Huge losses of forest resources are one of inevitable consequences of missile strikes. Shellings, mining, forests are one of the most vulnerable ecosystems to mining. The mine detonates, takes up dry grass and wood that provokes a forest fire. If there is no fire, the debris falls into the tree. Next is corrosion and poisoning of vegetation. The explosive weapons used in populated areas is associated with many environmental risks, such as high amounts of often contaminated rubble, and what is more important, the disruption of life-supporting services, which in turn creates humanitarian crisis. Bringing some numbers, just during October 10 and to October 20, I mean, just in 10 days, Russia launched 154 cruise missiles and 176 drones at Ukraine. Most of them were directed to energy infrastructure. And one topical example is how ongoing attacks on energy facilities will get us to heating crisis. The district heating system is still the main method for heating multi-family buildings in Ukraine. The heat production and transportation need stable power supply. So no electricity, no heat. In addition, the use of various types of electrical heating appliances is often the only way to heat homes without district heating. This while many houses damaged and many people displaced, living in collective center or even in damaged buildings, very often without windows, roofs or insulation. This crisis situation forces the country to search for alternative sources of heat, such as firewood, which in turn will, to one degree or another, contribute to decreasing of forest resources that have been significantly affected already by hostilities this year. And last point here about Russian military strategy, you asked. The massive attacks, October's attacks, destroying civilian infrastructure in populated area by using drones is a terrorism. That means nothing on the ground of the war, but price is being paid by civilians. This is a violation of all international established rules of warfare. Every day, Russian cruel attacks disable the unique equipment of energy facilities, which you cannot find just in a store. It takes time to manufacture it. And in order to survive this winter, Ukraine needs support from our international partners, primarily with appropriate spare parts and equipment, as well as humanitarian aid for people like blankets, warm clothes, heaters, and water purifiers are very important.
So in the midst of this humanitarian crisis that you're describing, and also the fact that Russia has again ramped up attacks on Ukraine, I imagine there's a lot of concern about people dying, people being hurt. How difficult is it in that kind of context to also get that attention for deforestation, for other impact to the environment? Like, is it difficult to convince people of the importance of this topic, or is that actually quite, that awareness quite present?
this difficult situation of fighting this Russia, my society is became more responsible. It's what I see for now. People are trying to reduce using energy appliance at home.
Returning to energy infrastructure, you've spoken a lot about what has been harmed, what has been targeted, what has happened concretely already. Of course, we're also getting a lot of reports also outside of Ukraine about Russian attacks or the threat of Russian attacks on the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit more about that and why that is such a big cause of concern.
The situation started on March 4, when Russian troops occupied Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant. Since then, Russians has been doing everything possible to disconnect the plant from the Ukrainian energy grid. They set up a military base at the plant, placing heavy artillery, which is in violation of international laws on the safety of nuclear power plant. Despite that, the Ukrainian regular management and staff have continued to operate the plant with understanding of their responsibility for nuclear safety. Many months of shelling nearly and around the plant periodically disabled its external power lines. Thus, from time to time, the emergency diesel generators are being used because the conflict-related damage of power lines supplying the plant risking a nuclear accident. And the point is that one of the crucial safety issues is the plant's cooling process that depends on availability of power supply. I mean, when the cooling system is stopped, the fuel rods of the reactors begin to melt. This is how the nuclear disaster happened at the Japanese nuclear power plant Fukushima, where the power supply system was destroyed by a tsunami, and after 3 hours, the melting of rods began. In this respect, the current situation on the Zaporizhzhia plant, Europe's largest nuclear power plant, poses a great concern in radiation safety. For today, the plant's 6 reactors are in cold shutdown, but still require power for cooling and other essential nuclear safety and security functions. So, I mean that plant is not provided electricity to household factories or other issues, and I mean that Ukraine lose the capacity of this plant. And there is an urgent need in demilitarization and deoccupation of the plant to prevent a nuclear accident. In this respect, the International Atomic Energy Agency calls for the establishment of nuclear safety and security protection zone around the plant. And last news is about that on October 22, the G7 non-proliferation nuclear weapons stated that they urge Russia to immediately return full control of Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant to its rightful sovereign owner, that is Ukraine.
Yeah. So, to make this a bit more concrete, how bad would it be if damage would occur to Zaporizhzhia? Like, how big would the area of impact be, for instance?
It depends. It depends on different natural conditions, climate conditions. In the day and minutes when it happened, I hope it will never happen. And it depends on winter. And first of all, the biggest damage was created by rain when Chernobyl accident, nuclear accidents happened.
Okay. So moving maybe from the big picture of the environmental harm that we see happening in Ukraine, I want to focus a bit more on how you do this kind of work. So you explained that you're monitoring this kind of impact for PACS. How do you go about monitoring environmental harm when there is a conflict waging around you?
At the beginning of my work, there was created the friendly use structure of database where incidents from military actions are being collected. Database includes different categories and subcategories with main parameters that I needed to properly describe these incidents. I mean, location, coordinates, etc. For example, we have the group energy infrastructure with three subgroups: nuclear power plants, thermal power plants, and substation. We are monitoring incidents together with our partner, Center of Information Resilience. And in this respect, I am supporting the work by searching Ukrainian information field. As you know, Ukrainian is my language, and it's easy for me to find relevant information. When the incident is identified, the verification procedure is applied to confirm the situation by different methods, including the use of satellite imageries. After verification process, I start preparing analysis of incidents' potential impact on the environment and on the public health, as well as recommendation on how to mitigate harm from hostilities and what needs of Ukraine just for now and in long-term perspective for recovery of Ukraine and which support is needed.
So does that mean that the information about environmental harm, does that come purely from open sources like media reports, or are there also people doing investigation in the field, maybe civilians reporting harm to you? How do you come by that kind of information?
We have a clear logical structure of our thematic report, and we are going by searching relevant information from leading experts in the area of our work. If we are talking about energy infrastructure, it's Minister of Energy interview data from the company that calls DETEC, energy company who generated and transmitted this energy, electricity, and these different experts who are in the field. And then we analyze this information and go to the work with coordinates of incidents and verification procedure.
I imagine that because a large part of Ukraine, or at least considerable parts of Ukraine, are of course under Russian occupation at the moment, or there's active fighting going on. Do you then worry that maybe because of inaccessibility to these areas, there's actually much more environmental damage than you're currently monitoring, that the problem's even bigger than maybe you're now realizing?
Yes, it's really point of our concern, because when you don't have an access to the information, at least, I don't mean access even to the sites, it became hard to imagine what extent of the damage in the place, in the areas of active hostilities. That's a point.
And I think, especially abroad, outside of Ukraine, we're also seeing this war partly as an information war. Like, there's a lot of concern about misinformation, even propaganda by different actors involved in a conflict. Is misinformation a problem that you encounter in doing your monitoring work?
Yes, there is a case, and last one was about an interpretation of energy minister's statement about the level of damage of energy system due to massive attacks on October 10. There was data that 30% of energy infrastructure was attacked with different type of damage or destruction of facilities. But then I found some sources indicated that there were 30% of losses of energy infrastructure. You see a difference. Yeah. So it would be right to make a double check by looking at the original source of information.
There's a tendency to see this war as one that has started beginning of this year. But of course, large parts of Ukraine have been in conflict since 2014, if I'm not mistaken, already. Do we know anything about environmental harm that has already occurred from fighting there? And does that tell us anything about what the impact of this current war will be?
Yeah, thank you for this question. It's actually important to take into account when you are looking at the environmental side of this war, how previous 8 years of Russian occupation of the most industrialized territory of Ukraine in Donbas impacted the environmental and technogenic safety of Ukraine. The conflict-related risks of chemical and radioactive contamination associated with operation of industrial enterprises is considered as pre-existing problematic of Donbas region since 2014. For example, in result of our researches of tailings storage facilities located in the area of hostilities showed the problematic that due to constant shelling and mined territories, there is no safe access to properly operate these hazardous facilities. I mean, no access for emergency response and repair works, no environmental monitoring, and no possibility to control the technical state. Additionally, there are a lot of abandoned sites with chronic pollution. Also, many abandoned mines appeared in Donbas during these 8 years. One research a year ago indicated that about 14 mines are in drainage mode, and 39 are flooding. These mines often are not managed and in emergency state. Mine waters pose a threat of poisoning groundwater, which is the only source of drinking water in some parts of Donbas, particularly in Luhansk Oblast. And this year, after Russia full-scale invasions, the number of occupied territory has increased, and the situation with environmental health is only getting worse.
Yeah. This, I imagine, is difficult to do, but sort of imagining a future where the war is hopefully over, how do we start with environmental recovery, rehabilitation? Like, what is needed in terms of action to protect the environment after the war?
We have a governmental recovery plan, and politically, they are responsible for the view on how we need to go with reconstruction and rebuilding of our country. But also, there are non-governmental organizations who are dealing with topic on green recovery and how what is the best way for Ukraine to clean up our lands and to build a green economy.
How long will recovery take, seeing that we're seeing maybe 8 years of fighting? How will that translate to recovery afterwards?
I would answer this with one example, that 1 year of the war takes 10 years of the demining. It's nobody can just say you how long it will take to recover, to restore, to rebuild the country after armed conflict. It depends on how Ukrainians are ready to take their responsibility, how our international partners are ready to support Ukraine, and we understand that there is a huge damage in environmental area, and we need to have a really financial support to clean up all this harm for the environment.
So speaking of support, you already mentioned financial support. In the work that you're doing, raising attention towards this topic, what are you hoping to achieve?
If you talk in general about the results that I hope to achieve, it's primarily to convey people quality information with verified data through the preparation of thematic reports and participation to distribute this information in relevant working groups. We are currently finalizing a report on energy infrastructure damage that will be published shortly. Also, I believe that database of verified incidents from military actions can be used for a further purpose to hold Russia accountable in means of environmental damage. It gives me a sense in my work.
If I may interrupt, Irina, what would accountability of Russia look like, ideally?
In respect to environmental area, I've seen that we need to create, Ukrainians with international support, create some mechanisms of how to get from Russia a compensation for environmental damage and reparations for crimes against the environment that cause ecocide. There is still a lot of work. And I think that UNIS system is allow us to bring this issue to the international level and to get these compensations for Ukraine's recovery.
Have we seen that kind of reparations specifically for environmental harm in any past conflicts? Like, are there good practice examples out there, or would this be a revolutionary new thing?
The revolutionary part of the reparations for Ukraine and for compensation of environmental damage would be the methodics on calculation of environmental harm. This is the most complicated part of the to receive this compensation. I mean that there is no example in the world how to calculate this damage, and it's new for all countries, despite we know about different current conflicts in different countries. So there is no good example that we can take, copy, and paste. So it's we are going through this way together with environmental specialists from different international organizations now.
Apart from sanctions, reparations, is there anything else you are looking for in terms of response, maybe a particular role from the international community?
If you are talking about legal framework, here is a need of adaptation of the term of ecocide. There is The term ecocide is applied to a variety of environmental harms, including from military actions. And there is a new ecocide definition developed by an independent expert panel convened by the Stop Ecocide Foundation. And here we can support the hope that is that the new definition presents a workable crime capable of being adopted into the mandate of International Criminal Court in Rome Statute. A new crime of ecocide is expansion of international accountability for environmental harm, including the ongoing situation with the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant. The shelling of the nuclear plants is absolutely under the term of ecocide. And the proposed crime extends the possibility of prosecution for environmental damage in the context of the war, for harm such as water pollution through oil spills, losses of biodiversity, as we said, and ecosystems, land and soil contamination, and air pollution.
Which would then also have the possibility of protecting the environment beyond this particular conflict, but also in other contexts as well.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much, Irina. I think you have given us a lot to think about already. I just wanted to check whether maybe there is anything that you feel you want to raise, but haven't had the opportunity so far, maybe something that you remembered you wanted to say, then we can still talk about that.
For industrial sector, a stable power network is required for different technological processes in order to keep technogenic safety. And industrial accidents can bring significant long-term consequences with transboundary effects on water. First example is mining sector. Disruption of energy services due to hostilities can create serious concern here. According to technology of coal mines, the absence of the power supply can stop the continuous pumping of both mine waters and methane, causing flooding and buildup of explosive gas in the underground galleries. This can have a catastrophic impact on water quality. Another example, the pumping of industrial waste to its storage facilities. It's constant process for the enterprises of chemical, energy, metallurgical, and oil industries. Some livestock enterprises have a technology as a seasonal pumping out of large tonnage liquid waste to filtration fields after they settle. Even temporary power interruption can create an uncontrolled release of waste into the environment, including water bodies. Some numbers. 200 tailings storage facilities, almost 1 billion tons of liquid industrial waste, are being concentrated in eastern Ukraine, that now is the area of active hostilities. And if to think about the context shelling of energy infrastructure this year, it's increasing risk of industrial accident provoking the pollution of the environment, including groundwater and rivers that are being used for drinking purposes.
So you also said something about transboundary. So does this mean that some of the environmental harm we're seeing is actually not limited to Ukraine, but is also affecting people in other countries as well?
In the nature, everything is connecting with everything. And there is a high concern from neighboring countries. And as I know, they already fixed some negative impacts from the war in Ukraine, in Poland, in Belarus, and they have in Moldova, they have already some transboundary consequences from this war. And of course, the first of all, the transfer is being made from water bodies. During our research last 2 years in Donbas region, we developed some accident scenarios on tailing storage facilities, and it was found that chemicals could get to the Moldova to Russia Federation into 3 or 5 days.